This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, March 4th, 2009.
Okay, good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to today's Employee Assembly Meeting, Wednesday, March 4th, 2009. I'd like to call this meeting to order and ask if there's any late additions to our agenda. Okay, with no late additions to our agenda, I will let you know the business of the day is an update from our Vice President of Human Resources, Mary Opperman, who will be joining us later on in the meeting. We'll pass on our report from our employee elected trustee.
And the report.
And now we'll move on to a report from our SA representative.
Emily couldn't be here today, but she says the SA update includes that they're now entering their election season. They're also working to change how they allocate funds through revisions of their bylaws. Not much else is going on besides our all-consuming direct election process. And then she says, vote Miller and Cusack for your presidential slate.
Oh.
we don't get a vote, but, you know, apparently she's running for, I would assume, right, vice president. So, good for her.
Great. Thank you, Jason. Move on to the report from our UA representative.
Okay. I sent out some information from the last meeting. The big thing as far as impacting the employee assembly is they are looking for a committee member for the University Sustainability Committee, which is a UA committee. But we do have one person you want to put on there. And I guess I put out a note to let people know, is there anybody here that is interested, or anybody know of anybody that might be interested? Because if not, I do have some people I may be able to contact, but I want to make sure people here have an opportunity.
You stole my thunder. I was going to mention IOC, but Ari also created a online thing for people to submit applications online.
Mm-hmm. So interested people would go to the
online
website. And Peter has an email from Alex, who's the chair of that committee, and Bill knows him. If you want to read it, they're looking for somebody who's dedicated and serious about sustainability. They don't want to just fill a position. They want someone who really is eager to serve.
You want me to read this thing?
Yeah.
From
and he's looking, and they're looking for someone quick.
Yes.
I've recently been charged with convening the new University Sustainability Committee. EA has the right to appoint one person to serve in the committee as a voting member. We need someone who is devoted to sustainable causes and will be available to meet not only this year but next as well. I'd like to post the committee's first meeting during the week after spring break, so the EA position needs to be filled as soon as possible. Let me know if you need any outside help with the appointment process.
Anyone interested here today? Okay, then I ask everyone to keep Peter, Bill, and I in the loop if you have anyone interested that you've pointed to the website. And try to spread the word if someone would want to move on quick. So yes, Bill, reach out to who you think.
Okay. And the only other point I want to bring up, I did send out also, the UA was looking at how to add flexibility to the committees for membership. They're having the same issues we are, trying to fill all the committees and whatnot. And that was really sent out. I wanted to make sure people, but that was just sent out informationally. It was an idea they had. They haven't even passed it or anything yet. They're actually having a separate meeting specifically on committees. I'm going to try and join that just to listen in and see what they're thinking about so I can bring some ideas here. But maybe they'll come up with some things that we haven't thought of that might help us with committee membership. And that's it.
Great. Thank you very much, Bill. And a report from our EA representative to the Faculty Senate. We'll pass on that. Report from Staff Climate Survey Steering Committee representative.
I attended that meeting in place for Bill, who could not attend. Racking my memory, Mary Opperman was at the meeting, and she had some concerns with the timing of the planned timeline for the survey. And it was agreed that they were going to do some focus groups, and she had a problem with those focus groups happening right now during the budget crunch. So some of those focus groups are going to be shifted. their original timeline of where the survey gets distributed to all staff, I think, is still on schedule. They just have to modify some of the timeline of where those focus groups get done and how that data is processed. But it was very interesting to see that committee. I mean, it was obviously very well planned. I mean, there's a lot of representation, and I think it's going to be a really good survey that the university will use year after year after year. But the senior management is concerned with, you know, surveying staff at a very critical, stressful time in the university's history, and considering that this is going to be beginning the baseline survey that they want to continue to do. So they want to make sure that they get these focus groups and that type of thing at the right time, and maybe postponing it like a month and a half or something may be better on the staff. So that was about it. That pretty much took up a large portion of the meeting. You may have received some of the documents. They also, there was a document that addressed the major subject areas of what will be surveyed, like everything from, you know, your job satisfaction to your reviews, and, you know, how are you valued at work, and what other stresses are involved in your life outside of work that might relate to work. So there were some really impressive categories. So that's about it.
Thank you, Jason. We'll move on to the report from the chair. I'd like to thank everyone for making it, especially Pat, who drives here from Geneva. Thank you, Pat. Today we are going to be talking about the majority of our meeting will be business of the day, an update from Mary Opperman. We'll also be going over the work the Charter Review Ad Hoc Committee did. I'd also like to bring up that elections are coming up soon. And with that, there will be a new executive group here for the EA. And again, I want to let everybody, just remind everybody to start thinking about succession planning. Are you interested in being an officer? And then I urge you, if you have any kind of interest whatsoever, to reach out to the EA members who are currently in those seats to find out information and find out if it would be a good match for something you're interested in. We met with Mary yesterday. It was Dennis, Jason, and I. And we talked, the whole meeting was talked about discussing the ins and outs of the latest initiative by the university in the retirement plan, the phase out. That is what she's going to be spending most of her time today talking to us about. It was great information, and you have to hear it from her to understand how it works. You will, if you haven't already, you will hear staff, whether they're age 55 or older and received one of these packets or not, talking about this and discussing it. And the better informed we are on this, the better we can do to support these employees that may have concerns or questions. As far as the open forum, we have been trying to hold, and we've been waiting on a theme. We've been given a better time and date, and that would be late April. It's still a need. The senior administration would still like to have us hold one of these, but we want to hold off till after a president's quorum is going to have an open forum, and we don't want to do it immediately before this or after this. It wouldn't make any sense. So we're going to push off till later in the spring, and then we'll try to get something rolling along with that. That's all I have. Any questions for me? Okay, we're going to move right on into approval of our meeting minutes from Wednesday, February 18th of 2009. I give everybody a couple minutes to glance over this and look for anything that they do not agree with or see meeting change. And then I'll ask for a motion to approve.
In the report from the IOC where we appointed Gary, you made some comments, Brian. I was wondering if we could get a little sense of in there, because right now it kind of makes Gary look a little glib. So it would be nice if there was a couple of statements about Gary in that section.
What would we add?
Something like Brian said such and such about Gary.
you know, kind of a couple of the qualifications that you mentioned last time for the minutes.
Did that actually happen? I don't remember anything said other than what Gary said.
Well, Gary said, I have it in front of me, he said, I think Brian said something.
Gary made a joke, but then I went on to talk more about Gary and his seriousness in becoming a parliamentarian, and that I did have a side meeting with him, and he was very interested. And I guess if we had Brian said that Gary Stewart is well suited for the position of parliamentarian, and I strongly encouraged him to go for the position.
Point of order, normally this is just to correct any errors in 10 minutes. I mean, if I don't know how I might look at not more what was said, but I don't think it looks that bad. But if it wasn't said, then it doesn't belong in the minutes. So,
well, I mean, whatever that was, he did say.
Well, I guess normally when there's a request like that, there's like specifically this is what he said. I mean, we have audio. Somebody could go back.
We'd have to.
Well, that's what I mean.
We'd have to pass on the approval of this and go back and look at what.
Well, I mean, nobody else cares. It's not a big deal.
In parliamentary procedure, the minutes are not supposed to be a full verbal record of the meeting.
Well, I just want like one sentence. Or something that said Brian spoke positively about it. Doesn't have to
I guess what I'm saying is, if you have a correction, we could put off approving the minutes and you could go listen to the audio.
Well, it doesn't have to be worded, just a sentence that says Brian spoke positively about Gary Stewart's credentials or something. Just one line that points out that Brian did say some words about him. I mean, if nobody else here thinks it's important, then.
That would be a general, that wouldn't be adding words that may have not been said, that would be something.
That's
else.
What I mean, yeah, not adding words.
I'm okay with that if that matches what can or cannot happen. What would it be?
Brian spoke some positive word about G. Stewart's credentials or whatever you want, whatever word you want to use there.
Which I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Is there a reason why that wasn't included in the minutes?
Right, it's just a summary and.
A summary of what was said?
Yeah.
Just sort of the basic points of what matters.
Pretty much the meeting minutes are. You can kind of look together the history of that meeting and see what was talked about, but it doesn't have everything in it. Exactly. So, Peter, you're suggesting we make a correction or an addition to the IOC report.
Mm-hmm.
Brian spoke positive words about Gary Stewart's credentials.
For a position of parliamentarian. Yeah.
Is everybody okay with that?
Yes.
That did happen. I don't remember exactly what I did say, but. Okay.
Thanks.
Well,
I would make a motion to approve the meeting minutes as amended.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstain? Okay, we'll pass the meeting minutes of Wednesday, February 18th, 2009, with the noted addition in the IOC report. Okay, we're going to move on to our committee reports. And I ask that if you're making a report, you just state who you are and then move on to your report. Brian Cornell, Chair of the EA Executive Committee report. We did cancel the meeting. Right?
Yeah, due to this extended meeting.
The Executive Committee meeting was canceled. There was soup and hope. And also the extension of this meeting. So we did not meet. I'll keep the floor and move on to staff recognitions and awards committee. I'm trying to get another meeting together, but the soonest time I can get everybody available, and it's needed that everybody on this committee is available, is late March. So we are looking at George Peter Award applications through email, and we're going to work it out that way. Amy in her office mailed all the applications, and we're going to work together that way so we can try to move on the nomination process. I also will be sending an email out there shortly regarding what we talked about in the winter retreat and the newest award that we would like to be giving out as EA members, kind of like the Unsung Hero Award. But we decided that we needed criteria. It's not going to be just a, hey, pick this person for this award. So once I draft that out, I'll just shoot that out through email too, just to get some feedback from the group, and then we'll move forward with that. Any questions for me and this committee? Okay, we're going to move on to our communication committee.
Due to the charter involvement, we have not met, so there's nothing to report.
Okay, and we'll move on to finance. Did Alan leave anything for anybody? Okay, we're back. Yes, Pat.
If I could ask a question, I know, I'm not certain if it was the last meeting or the meeting before, we had talked about the expenses that were coming in as a result of the president's address. And, I'm not certain where we stand with that as far as how those figures are affecting the budget. And I got to wonder if our budget is in deficit at this point as a result of those additional expenses. So I guess I would maybe ask if Alan at the next meeting could provide us with a report.
Sure.
About the conditions.
Yeah, and 2 weeks ago, I know he said he was still waiting and then he was going to try to get more information. I don't know if he has heard anything else. But to make us, I'm not 100% certain, but from what it sounds and knowing what we were quoted in certain aspects of the Energy Fair and President's Address, I think we're okay still.
Okay.
He placed the resolution that was going to be brought forward of reducing our EA budget by 10% for this operating year, this fiscal year, because of the unknown expenses, and we wanted to get a handle on that before we made any kind of commitment and move forward on doing something like that. So. Emergency grant fund, anything to report?
We met last week. Lynette Chappelle Williams did come and speak to the group about the hardship fund. She gave us a summary of the criteria that they will be using to determine the eligibility and the committee that's going to be made up to make those decisions as far as people who apply for the hardship fund. I believe Bill, quote me, and Ari, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think she had mentioned it would be a $750 award, and the criteria is a bit loose. It really is a one-time help. I'm sorry. It's a one-time help for an ongoing problem.
Yes.
Is that how we want to say it? So they're still finalizing the criteria. Their hope is to roll it out by the end of March, I believe, and to hopefully have folks come and apply for these funds.
Offhand, I know it's not firm or it's not final yet, but what were the talks of the amount of the award?
$750.
That's it, or any in between? It would be.
Well, it ranged. There was the criteria was. I'm sorry, I don't have my notes from that.
I'm remembering it was their target is to raise $750,000, but that's a target that's very fluid because they don't know how much they're going to be able to raise.
Right.
And they were talking about a tiered system based on salaries. The lowest tier would be people less than $40,000, $80,000, and then I think anybody above $80,000 would not be eligible.
By exception.
Yeah. Oh, and can I comment? And I just want to point something out about our university and where we work. The president pledged to give any employee under a certain amount, I believe it was $40,000 income, a $750 one-time bonus. Now, if that employee experiences hardships and they can fall under the criteria of this hardship fund, that could be another $750. That equates to close to what a person's SIP may be for the year. So I think it's very positive the university is taking these steps to help out in times of need, and I just, you know, keep that in your minds and spread the word as being positive, and there are people out there trying to help. You get a 2% SIP raise or a 3% SIP raise, and you qualify for the hardship fund and get the bonus, you're making out a little better in the short term. I just want to point that out when you see something positive like that happening.
I agree. And I think everybody on the Emergency Grant Fund Committee agreed with that. The one part that is still a little bit unclear is how this is going to roll out and if it can roll out to include the CARE Fund. I'm saying CARE Fund because we are renaming the fund. I think we've talked about that before. I think one of the concerns is that there would be some misunderstanding or not clear understanding of the two separate funds, what one does versus what the other does. So I think we're still having some discussions about that rollout. I think there's some hesitation on some committee members' parts to roll that out simultaneously. But I think the desire is to just get those folks who need the money to get them the money. So we're going to be meeting again tomorrow, and we are discussing the processes and procedures that are really somewhat bylaws, I would say, of the committee. But our goal is to get the communication out as soon as we can about the name change, that it is going to no longer be EGF, it will be the CARE Fund. So that's a critical piece for us to get rolled out. Did I miss anything, Ari and Bill?
I think that's critical stuff.
Being a former member of the Emergency Grant Fund, I do know that money is sitting there, and what do we get on average? 2 to 4 applications a year. So the money is not being used in the best interest of the people who need it. But that's for this committee to work on and bring it to the table for us.
And I apologize, Brian, that is another piece that I think is important to bring to this table. We did talk about a few years back, there was over $45,000 in that account, and the chair of the EA at that time made a recommendation to roll over $20,000 into a long-term investment pool account. So we did do that. We were very successful in that. We still have about $20,000 sitting in the account. So I know one of the concerns is once we decide we're going to change the criteria, and we may expand it a bit, maybe to include medical expenses, there was some concern that we weren't going to have adequate funds to support that. So that, again, is a discussion that we're currently having. But one other piece that I do want to add, we also talked about the way that the account is managed. And as it sits right now, it's in the Office of the Assemblies. I have been given access to that account as chair of the committee, so I do have access now to see exactly what transactions are processed, what deposits, et cetera, are made. And the signature authority has been removed from Deb Billups, who was formerly the chair.
Yep.
And I think that's going to reside right now in the Office of Assemblies until we develop final details. So those are a couple of the pieces I think we need to know.
That's a good update. Thank you, Pat. Any questions for the EGF? Okay, personnel policy. We're going to rename with Pat.
Have not met. I apologize. We'll have to get to that soon.
Okay, thank you. IOC, Peter?
Well, Bill kindly stole my bit about the sustainability committee. But the elections are coming up as well, and I suspect that we're going to talk about the schedule for that and other details at our next exec meeting. And then when we have more information, we'll bring it back here.
Are we making an election?
A little update. That's sort of, it's gotten sort of rolled over time, and basically, we want to put the patches down on Monday of next week, which is the same time they went out last year.
Okay.
So we've basically taken everything IOC approved last year and used that as sort of a default fallback plan. So things we've done, we communicated with President Squirton's office about sending an email to all staff to let them know about the possibility of elections. It's approved. We got the data this year. It will go out on Monday. So that's when we're out.
That's when we're in retirement.
President has basically updated the schedule already for elections. So we can talk about it tomorrow, but because we really need to get I thought the email that drafted out like a while ago, you know?
Yeah.
The elections schedule.
We were supposed to meet about it at 3 o'clock, executive committee, but somehow we're just talking about it.
So we basically retook the schedule from last year. Amy checked it for holiday conflicts. So we're going to roll out with that. And,
other good times.
And what are the deadlines for submitting your application materials or your intent to run whatever?
I didn't
we call
bring it.
It
with me, but I'll email it out when I get
okay.
back.
That would be great. And Peter, off the top of your head, do you have an idea of who is up for re-election?
I think Amy has the list. I know about half the people here or on the currently on are up for re-election.
Up for re-election are myself, Peter, Bill Vick, Julie McGoor, Inda, Pat, and the vacancy.
That's actually a little more than half.
Am I on there or not for re-election?
Leon, you are on until 2010.
Oh, okay, good.
Because you came back and came
you
back.
Left and came back and were reappointed as a new seat.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, Peter, are you interested in hearing from those of us who are up for re-election if we intend to
sure.
run again?
And
would that be helpful for you?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know that. And copy the office members as well.
And if somebody's interested in rerunning that's already a current EA member, do they have to fill out the application? Do they have to resubmit an application, or are they just... express interest?
They still have to submit materials.
Mm-hmm. Online?
No, I think there's some written materials. I think you still have to petition. It's only 25 signatures, though.
I thought that still.
Not for running, only for, appointments.
To fill a vacancy.
The thing is, there should be some written requirements because if you're having an election and you're putting people on a ballot and all of that, there should be something to.
Well, why doesn't the faculty senate do
I don't believe that they have faculty elections all the same way.
They're all appointed?
I think they might caucus by department. I'm not sure how they do it, but they don't have a university-wide election.
And that?
I think the petition is a good thing. At least 25 people know who you are and that you are running for
something. I know, but maybe that's just me.
In to change this, Ari, let's say the majority of, would it be a vote by the EA to negate the 25 signatures?
You'd have to amend the election rules and remove the part that requires the petitions, but like I said, we're kind of come up to
saying election rules, is that in our existing charter?
Well, I think they'd be more like bylaws. They're not in the charter's bylaws, but they were.
Right. What I was going to suggest is, you know, obviously the elections have to move forward this semester, this spring. If there's enough EA interest in making this kind of a change, we need to just bring it up as an agenda item at another meeting, and we can move on trying to see get a group together maybe or. But we're not going to be able to make that decision now on doing that. But as of now, it's still the same application packet as it has been in the past. Okay.
And if I could just make one more statement, I think it's really important for us as existing members who are interested in running again to get our packets in very early. I know we were like right at the edge on a couple of times, and we just weren't sure if those folks were interested in returning. So I would encourage all of us who are asking to continue.
And then if you are interested, just email me in 08 that we're aware of it, and also we have an idea of who's going to stay on and kind of start planning ahead for new executive committee discussion. So. And then also, if we know that you're interested in running, we kind of pressure you to put in those packets, whereas you might forget about it. So at least send an email, say, yeah, I'm interested in running, then we keep tabs on you.
The other thing I want to mention is we are able this year to offer an online voting option in addition to the written ballot. So we're hopeful that will...
In addition.
As an alternative.
As an alternative.
So if you submitted both, we wouldn't count the written ballot.
Right. Great. Cool.
And we'll be talking with the executive committee a lot about that.
Okay. Anything else, Peter?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. The university benefits.
I think they're still suspended.
Okay. Employee education. Jason, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. And I'm going to, at this time, turn the floor over to Jason Seymour, our executive vice chair, and he's going to lead the next committee report.
Okay, we're going to be continuing our charter review of the great work that the Ad Hoc Charter Review Committee has done and Ari for making this brilliant document that makes it easy to read, the old and the new. I'd just like to reiterate some of the rules of the discussion again from last time. I'll maintain a list of speakers if you'd like to speak on in the next order or rotation on the list. Just get my attention somehow by raising your finger or eye contact, and I'll write you down, and we'll continue from there. So we're going to continue with Article 4, which is our largest of the remaining four articles to go through. It's 9 pages long, and it's on officers. So if we can get through that, then I think we'll be able to get through the final three articles. If by some chance we can't in this meeting going to 2:30 and being interrupted with Mary's visit, we will have to reassess if we are able to get in another meeting or extend another future meeting in connection with the elections to be able to get this document prepared for the employees to vote on it for our existing charter revision clauses. So let's start with Article 4 then. Does anybody have any prepared questions or statements on the changes in Article 4? Go ahead, Bill.
We're looking at the whole article, so they have some in 4.2.
Yeah, we can jump around the whole article, and it's so just, you know, we don't have to go specifically in order. So if you have something now, you can start.
On Article 4.2, then, it states in there the vice chair of internal operations must seek in the position of chair, lead the meeting until the chair is elected. The newly elected chair presides over the remainder of the meeting. So my question was, if the vice chair runs for chair, then who leads the meeting? And that, it was a little confusing. I think if the vice chair is running for chair, I'm not sure if we got someone leading the meeting at that point. It's a little confusing when you read it. I was struggling.
I think we were relying on Robert's rules for how you pick a chair on an interim basis, which I think is something, there are several methods. One of them is drawing straws. Really, you know, everybody agrees that so-and-so can preside over the meeting for that one decision.
When I read it, I just want to make sure we've got, you know, we don't get to a point where we're actually in a situation and we say, okay, the vice chair's not in the chair, okay, now we don't have a chair.
I can double check Robert's rules, but I'm pretty sure it's drawing straws or just have a vote without a chair on a nomination without a chair, although I think that could get a little awkward if there was convention. But if nothing else, you can draw straws.
And I don't know if we want to incorporate that into the charter. I think maybe we may want to make a statement, Ari, that, you know, the Robert's Rules of Orders, Robert's Rules of Orders were applied for.
Well, it's already in there that if anything is not stated, Robert's Rules is your backup for procedure questions.
I guess another question I have is, is there a preference about what you'd like the process to be?
As long as somebody who is not, somebody who doesn't have interest in the position is leading, then there's no conflict.
Yeah, that's fine.
What if you let the outgoing vice chair of internal operations conduct the whole meeting?
Well, they might be running for other things. Too.
Well, they. Oh.
Yeah, at some point you're still going to have some kind of an issue about who runs the meeting.
Or would.
What
about the current chair who's not running? Mm-hmm. You know, let's say for me as an example, when I be able to run the meeting, I'm not going to be running for any position.
But in your first year, you could run for chair again.
Right. That's right.
I think last time I ran that meeting, right, for the most part, except for the ILC vote when you took over, but then I was re-elected, so I took over again for the rest.
Yeah.
We could add the sentence, otherwise any other member not seeking the position of chair, maybe.
There you go.
That's
fine.
By at random.
Yep.
Right.
Okay.
It's a small enough group too.
By 2/3 vote. No, I'm just joking. I'm not so bad anymore.
Be there all day.
I have a question on the language in number 4, still under 4.2. Allows all members present to ask questions of the candidates, including the candidates for the office. Meaning, other candidates for other offices can ask questions of the current candidate that's in that position. I mean, I'm kind of confused of the language there.
I think that means the candidate for the office that's currently being, the election is currently being held for, so the candidates can ask each other questions as well as the assembly members.
Mm. So Peter's running for chair. Jason and I am also. Peter's up on the floor. I can still ask Peter a question. Okay.
Such as, would I be a much better chair than you?
Okay.
Well, Jason, should that be clear or?
Well, I mean, it could be clear, or I could say, you know, you could strike it because it says allows all members present, and is that meaning including?
I agree. Take off and put in the candidates for the office.
Including candidates for that office. We're going to make this language clear.
I don't think we need it.
It says also take out.
Okay.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody have any other questions on from my own copy I've kind of gone through and I've got some grammatical things that I would like to suggest later to the committee, maybe an email. But even though this is so long in articles, there was only a very few sections that I even had issues on. Actually, here's one.
I noticed one.
Okay. Go ahead.
You can read it any number of times and you still notice things. In Article 4 at the very beginning, where it says the officers of the assembly are, and then there's a sentence beneath that that says the assembly elects officers by secret ballot from among its members. It mentions secret ballot later in the election procedure, so I think that's another sentence I could go.
Yeah. In the first part.
Yeah.
In this part of the
agree.
Officer elections.
So yeah.
Do we have to be clear on is this? Oh, it would be all the new membership. Because you have new membership and then old membership. Remember, there's the two. And I believe the old membership is not able to vote.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow. When you're choosing officers,
this is the organizational first meeting after the new term, so they're already not present at this meeting.
Well, last time we invited them to come and make statements if they wish to.
That's not in here this time.
No. Okay. So, an older member, whether they're there, invited to be there or not, still cannot vote.
Mm-hmm.
So this, you don't have to write anything different.
Right.
We should know that it means voting members can vote.
Does the charter say anywhere that it's a closed meeting necessarily?
Mm-hmm.
Does it? Because I know we had a lot of contention last year about inviting those people. I kind of insisted on allowing the old members to come to and make statements.
Convenes an organizational meeting in closed session.
So do we need, should we add a piece that allows us to invite certain individuals to that closed meeting? Because it seemed like a pretty big deal last year.
We thought it was important because, so let's say half of the EA is gone. A new half is there.
Mm-hmm.
We're voting on the future of the EA for a year as far as officers. And you have people who have not seen what other EA members have done.
Yeah.
That are voting, and that's 50% of the vote right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think we invited the old membership to get input, as if Leon and I were against each other in a hostile position, that we could hear from. So that takes Leon and I out. So now we're down to 30% of people who actually are aware of Leon and my ability voting against everyone else who's new. Do you see what?
Well, I do. But I guess my concern with that is the remaining members have to deal with the decisions that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not certain that the outgoing members should influence those decisions.
When they don't get to vote.
I know, but they get to speak, and I think that some can be very persuasive.
Well, it should
I mean, if I'm outgoing, I'm going to be talking loud.
Right. but you have the inside knowledge,
right,
and you're able to offer something that's important.
At this point, we're going to suspend our charter review for our featured guests, Mary.
That sounds so cool.
Mary and Dennis.
Oh,
the Mary and Dennis show.
Do you want to come to the show?
No, it's the Mary show.
Okay.
Your charter review.
Yeah, with special extended meeting.
Mary, I said that for the EA to have no resolutions up to date this year, but to end the year with a referendum to the charter, I think it makes up for it.
There you go. A good referendum to the charter.
Yeah. Complete overhaul.
Oh, that's pretty well.
That's
the three.
Yeah,
the
three
is my number. Study. And I believe there's a couple of slices of pizza and some soda up there. We did meet with Mary yesterday. I let everybody know what our discussion was about briefly, and said today you're going to talk a little bit about our latest Cornell initiative, and also give us any updates that you may be aware of.
Okay. So by now you know that the university has offered two retirement incentive programs. The packets to the eligible employees for the first incentive program are out. So if you're eligible for it, you've received a packet by now, or will shortly. There are two programs. The first is a staff retirement incentive program. There are 1,300 staff available for that, eligible for that. And that program runs from March 1st to March 31st. It is a retirement program. It has the feature as an incentive. So staff who are eligible must be 55 with at least 10 years of service. Those who take it will receive a year's pay and three additional years of retirement contributions into their retirement account. When they sign up for it, they also give away they retire, but they cannot come back onto the regular payroll. So they leave. and then they are gone. They can come back as casual, but they can't come back regular. And the reason for this is, honestly, because we're looking for ways to reduce the payroll short of a layoff. Our effort continues to be to find ways to reduce our costs. It's an expensive program. There is no doubt about that. It will take us about 15 months to recover the incentive, and so it will take us longer to recover the cost of a person who takes the incentive than it will be. Up until now, we've got 71 people so far who have signed up. We had a lot of people right in the very beginning, and now we hope, because as you know, we can't accept these until we see how many people take it. We have a limited number of dollars in the pool. So we're looking at how many people end up taking a fund for it, and then we'll take them on the basis of when the service take longer, so the people get into first. And then we'll accept them and go down from there. So that's the first program. The second program is the staff phase retirement program. That began on March 1st. It has no end date. So that will continue going forward. And we don't have any more clients for that yet. And we actually don't think that we will right away. This is an ongoing program. We just announced it at the same time. And that allows people to reduce their hours to 20 hours a week. But continue their contributions into their pension at full, so they double their pension contribution, or keep it at full pension contribution for up to 3 years, and then from there they retire. So it's a great program. It's very similar to the faculty phase retirement program. Keep all the benefits at full. It's a great way to phase into retirement once you're really ready to go. So those are the two programs we announced. Again, both of them have the advantage of reducing payroll costs.
I think the question has come up a couple of times about can I change my mind once I sign my packet and send it in?
Up until March 31st, we will let people come and take their application back. Get cold feet. The better thing to do is not to hurry up and sign up, because it's not a first-come, first-served program. All applications will be taken and put in order of credited service length. So there's no reason to rush it. Go see your financial advisor, talk to TIA, Crest and Fidelity, or Ing, or whoever you have your... there's no reason to hurry the application in. Once March 31st hits, it's permanent. You can't take it back.
And the notification date of those who are deemed eligible and approved?
Yeah, by the last day of the first full week in April.
Mary, why is it for those that are, the supervisor does not have to approve one, but they have to approve the phase, I guess?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why do they have to approve the phase?
Because it's a program that would require the workload
to be covered. The other mm-hmm.
businesses. Right.
I got you.
Mary, you said the first program has a budget for the limited number.
No, I know we have the provost is trying to find as much money as he can for the program. It's one-time funds, and we obviously have a diminishing amount of funds, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
But the amount of people we can take depends on who applies, because it's based on payroll. So the higher the payroll cost of the people who apply, the fewer number of people you can take.
What are the, obviously local HR is there to help, and then Central University HR benefits.
Mm-hmm. And then Fidelity, TIA, all the investment houses that manage the retirement accounts, they're really the best people to talk to.
And they're familiar with the
program? Oh, they're on campus.
I'm sure they were right there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So those are the groups that we point concern staff to.
Yeah, everyone got a packet, and in the packet is all of the resources are listed.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. that's very, very important that individuals be directed to the folks that are on that packet for advice. So this is a very personal decision that people make, and so it's important that folks not be, that their personal choice not be interfered with. This is a voluntary program. It's no different than any other decision to retire. So it's important that folks not be coerced in any way, either to take it or not take it, that they really have a full voluntary decision about whether or not to take it. So if you think in terms of the choice people have to retire every day, voluntary decision to retire, this is the same voluntary decision, it's just that there's a little extra money involved.
I need to express to you that some employees at the Red Cross were very upset. They thought they were eligible for option one. They now know
that they're not.
That they're not. That they just didn't answer them.
Yeah. That they didn't get a packet.
Well, they thought they were eligible, and they would, through talk and asking questions, that and even if they'd be left today, they just wanted it.
Probably because they're on sponsor funds.
At 25, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the vet college should have been on top of that before there was so much discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a difficult situation in terms of, we didn't put a lot of restrictions on, but grant funding is one area typically where you don't make programs like this eligible because you're going to replace all those people.
We're not grant funded, but we've got some contract with New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
what we
saw. Yeah, we have actually a number of federal funded programs in CALS and in CUMAC that are very disappointed too. Yeah. Anyone who doesn't get the choice, whether they plan to take it or not, I've heard from probably all of them, and the senior staff, I might add, who are also not eligible. I've heard from every one of them.
And then yesterday, Jason and I asked Mary why we weren't eligible either. We're just not eligible. we were disappointed.
30-something discrimination.
Some people have said that, not some people, a few people mentioned to me the other day that because the salary for a year is like in a lump sum, they think they're going to get hit really hard up front.
Yes, and they will.
So mm-hmm. it couldn't have been phased
no.
over time. No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
You're going to do it, you're going to do it.
It's important to keep remembering the program is designed to immediately reduce our payroll costs. That's why we're doing it. So every aspect of this was considered on the basis of being able to reduce payroll costs. So as of June, that's why everybody has to be off the payroll as of June 30th. That's why there will be very limited replacements. That's why jobs that are not on our, essentially our payroll, and therefore have to be replaced, were exempted.
Right.
That's why senior staff were exempted.
Right.
I keep trying to remind them of that. They have the most access to me and are the grumpiest. You know, every piece of this was considered juxtaposed with two core messages. One is these are the longest service people on the campus, and we're trying as best we can to be humane. On the other hand, the reason that we're doing this is because the necessity to reduce our payroll costs is a given. And so that's not going to change. And so you're holding these two almost contradictory realities next to each other. And they have to sit side by side.
Here is the curve contribution mm-hmm. piece. I'm contract college, and most contract college folks don't even know what CURP is
right.
because they're not eligible. Can you just explain that a little bit more and what a contract college person would need to do to have a CURP account?
So they'll be getting a whole brand new account mm-hmm. on the private side because in order for us to make the statutory side eligible for this part of the plan. So we could always give money, right? We always give the annual pay. But in order to make the contract college site eligible for the any kind of a retirement account, we had to open up the CURP, which is the Cornell University Retirement Program, for them, because we can't access either NYSERS or the ORP. Those are not available to us. They're not our pension plans, and we can't touch them. So we'll set up a whole new brand new account. We'll put 30% salary into those accounts. So it's a brand new account, and the retirement account first. Margaret Moon will explain what that means to this individual. It's a brand new account that'll be set up.
So it's not required that they do that.
Well, that's the only way they can get it.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Otherwise, there'd be no pension for them.
And how soon after that account is open may they start withdrawing?
Access immediately.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in order to immediately upon retirement if they want, or they don't have to.
Different question, switching gears a little bit. The department recommendations for budget cuts were sent to the provost. If a department recommended position eliminations,
right,
is it the provost's position to veto the department's decision to do that? Or is that something where he could send back to the department and say, I really want you to try to find other cuts and not cut these positions that you recommended?
No. What's likely to happen is that the college might do that, but not the provost. The provost its job is to take a look at how departments, how colleges are going to make their cuts. But the provost wouldn't go down into a department.
Okay. My second question is, if a layoffs are coming to a department, is there a set university standard for the severance? And
yes.
The amount of time.
There's a state university process all the way through. So there's a whole lot of confusion because we layered this incentive on. I'm looking away because there's papers flying all over outside. So just so you don't think that I'm being you see them flying all over the place? Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, gosh, either a student was unhappy with a grade,
or that's that policy.
Somebody decided against the packet and threw it up in
the air. Yeah, there's an offensive check.
Yeah, exactly. What's going to happen now is that likely departments will see whether or not anyone takes the incentive. That may very well change their plan. So
the retirement incentive.
Yeah. Okay. So if anyone takes the incentive, and I think what we need to do here is step back a little from all the talk that's going on now and recognize that a lot of people are eligible. I don't know how many people that are eligible will actually end up taking it. And I think that what's happening on the campus now is a lot of people are talking about taking it. I can't tell how many people that are talking are actually going to sign up. My experience about these is a lot of people are very serious about considering it. But when it comes time to it, giving up your job and then giving up we're the largest employer tenfold. It's a pretty big deal to decide not to work here anymore. So you're essentially saying, I'm good. I'm going to retire and I'm going to move, or I'm going to retire and I'm going to do something different, or that we know how many of our eligibles are where you would be to make that decision. So I'm not sure how many of our total population will end up doing that, but be that as it may, some number.
So if these weren't retirement eligible people that their position is eliminated, what type of, is the time frame standard across the board of how long?
So they'll have to go, so some percentage of these folks are going to take this. They'll have to be gone by June 30th. That is going to change those plans that were submitted in some way, right? You thought it was going to be some number of layoffs, it's going to be less, it's going to be different. So the plans will have to go back and be reworked. After that, then layoff notices will either not have to happen, or they'll have fewer will happen, or they'll happen differently. That list of layoffs will then, if there still needs to be any, will then go to the central OHR for review. We then process it in a very, they have to give us all of the justification of anyone on that list. It goes to our office and to General Counsel's office. We review everything that's been written. We follow a particular pathway. We do adverse impact analysis, and the General Counsel's office reviews everything that's been written. We either approve them or we don't. So they have to follow through and be approved by Central and by the General Counsel. Once those are approved, they're sent back to the unit, and then the layoff benefits are applied. Severance, notice period, outfits, and all given, and notice are levels are all done in exactly the same way across the
region. So the length of time. Mm-hmm. What is the
severance is a week per year, up to 24 weeks, and notice is a minimum of 30 days, 60 when you can. And outplacement is 2 months at the outplacement company. Then you come back, and the person has the choice of the next 4 months either being at the outplacement company or inside with the case manager. So a total of 6 months.
Thank you. Mary, if I can ask a question. I believe you indicated to this group a month or two back before the incentive program was announced that March would be the time, mid-March or so would be the time when layoff notices
right.
would have been gotten out. So with the incentive program and with the process you just described, April now,
yeah.
mid-April?
Yeah, I think so, because I think what we want to do now is, mid to late April, because I'd like to see what the incentive does to the need for layoffs. That's why we did it. So some amount of layoffs may still be necessary. Depends on who takes this and how much go back we need to have. I mean, some number of these people that are going to go have to be replaced, and then we have to pay for that. Some number of the people who go won't have to be replaced, and most of the people who go won't be replaced. Or they'll be replaced by vacancies elsewhere.
Okay.
Through attrition or through some other means. So the goal here is to use those vacancies to not have to do that. So hopefully they'll forestall layoffs at least through this fiscal year.
Okay. Were these two programs generated internally within HR, or did they come from like suggestions that everybody was submitting? Suggestions, I don't know how many were received in total, but you know how everybody was asked to send in your ideas and stuff?
Yeah, no, the phase retirement is something we've wanted to do for years.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sort of sorry we put it out with the incentive, except that for people who want to stay, I thought it was a good thing that they could compare it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really ready to go, and when they look at the fact that the 1 year pay is really good, but they're going to get taxed at 40%, they're not really ready, and they're only 66 or something, they see that base program's there, they may say, well, I can see a way out, maybe not right now. I wanted them to see that they had that.
Right.
So we've always wanted to do that, and we thought now would be a good time to kind of slip it in. The incentive program is always, they're just good options for payroll reduction when you're trying to avoid layoffs. So Towers Perrin is our outside consultant, and they came in and helped us do it, design it. And I'm not a big fan of these because it's hard to hold the replacements down. So I'd actually been arguing against it for a while because it's hard to hold the replacements down. But I just can't, the idea of laying off long-service people just goes against everything I believe in. So even though the replacement issue is very concerning to me, just the idea of laying off longer-service people just goes against my grain. So, this is chaotic and messy, but I still think it's the right thing to do. We'll see. Hopefully we'll be able to manage it. It didn't come through the
suggestion board. Are you sure that we had a conversation yesterday that the program was particularly championed by the president?
Yeah.
And had it, we had a different president, this might not be happening.
No, we had a lot of deans and against and vice presidents dead set against it because it's not strategic. You know, you don't, you can't say where you're going to lose people. So you risk spending all this money on someone and then having to replace that job, right? So it's not, at a time when you don't have a lot of money, you know, you're risking spending money and then having to fill that job, right? So it's not a perfect solution from a financial standpoint. And, you know, we went up against the trustees. We went up against a lot of, I mean, I have not had some of my more pleasant conversations with managers and faculty lately. But, you know, this is, like I said, you have these two core messages laying side by side that don't necessarily sit perfectly next to each other. When you're trying to do the right thing in an organization where these are not people who have done anything wrong, and yet I feel in many cases they're very vulnerable. When you're trying to figure out who you're going to lay off, in some cases they're people who are vulnerable to layoff. And also, there are people, honestly, who if the market hadn't tanked, in a lot of cases, would have retired. So when I look at my data, a large percent of these folks would have retired. And so I was dealing with a lot of factors in this that said, you know, this is not, they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't cause this. They didn't tank the market. They didn't do anything. You know, you hold a set of values and principles. Say you're an employer of choice. Things go wrong in the institution. You have to make a lot of bad and difficult decisions. You don't stop being the kind of employer that you want to be because things go bad. So you try to take streams of decision making and bring them together in the new. But it is imperfect. It is an imperfect thing. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
If we didn't have this, what would the retirement age difference be? So this is an early...
Well, this is the right, it's not early.
Oh, okay.
This is the same retirement age. If we didn't do this, if we hadn't done this, so I haven't looked, and I'm not looking yet, but I don't know how many 55-year-olds are going to be able to do this, right? In a really healthy economy, you get people who would then move away and go get a job someplace else, and you get some percentage of the 55-year-olds because they bank on the fact that they can go and get something somewhere else. Not a lot of other places to go, right? So I'm not sure that you're going to get a really lot of those. You might get a few who are willing to take the risk and move away and go someplace else. I don't think we're going to get a lot of those. So most of the people that you're going to get that are taking this are going to look at their portfolio, I hope, although anyone that signed up till now, I don't know how they did that, but you know, they're going to look at their portfolio, they're going to look at 60% of a year's pay, give or take, and they're going to say, hopefully, they've been moving their money, they're 60-some-odd years old, hopefully they've been moving their money out of risk into low risk, so they didn't lose as much because they're into low risk assets already. And they say, okay, with this 40% and the 30% going into an already low risk asset allocation, I can make it, you know, and I'm going to move and I'm going to do the things I was planning to do and I'm at my retirement age and this is just enough to get me where I need to go. That's, you know, that's sort of what you're hoping for, right? That's what our retirement patterns would indicate. That's who we were aiming for. Because those are people that if you don't make this, if you don't give them this, and they stay, they're not productive, right? Because they wanted to retire. Our data tells us that as soon as staff can afford to go, unlike faculty, as soon as they can afford to go, they retire. Our retirement patterns are perfectly predictable on staff. As soon as their finances allow them to, they retire. So we have no creep up and retirement age. Faculty, soon as the end capping hit, their retirement age has been steadily creeping up. We have 40% of our faculty are of retirement age. It's been creeping up ever since it's on campus. Staff, not at all. The only time that the staff retirement age creeps up is when the market hits. So in the early 2000s, it started to creep up. Then it got good. When the market got good again, it came back down. So what you want to avoid as an employer is having people here who don't want to be here, especially in when you're asking them to do more, work harder, right? Fewer resources. That's exactly your workforce profile you don't want, right? So we're saying, well, if you can give them a little bit and they can get out on their own terms, that's a win-win, right? They leave. You have the workforce that chooses to stay. That's what you want to have happen. That's kind of the thinking behind it. You're much more likely to get that reduced workforce is a profile that's going to be able to hang on during this difficult time, be more optimistic, be more able to, because they're choosing to stay. It's got nothing to do with age. It has to do with choice. So the profile of that 1300 is those who looked at the incentive and said, no, I'm going to stick it out, chose to stay.
Okay. I don't know how much time you have.
I don't know how much time I have either. They've just been pushing me.
You have 5 to 10 more minutes.
I have 5 to 10 more. Maybe I want to talk about something other than the SRI. Okay.
I did bring up about the EA being on hand for a public forum of some sort, and that we were going to push it off till later in the spring, late April, because the president's forum.
Yeah, I don't know. Amy, do you know if he was going to do an open meeting? I'm not involved in that, but I think he was going to do an open meeting. Do you know anything about that?
Hopefully sometime this month.
Yeah.
I've not had any confirmation about.
Okay.
And
so,
if we don't want to do one prior or, before or right after, so we were maybe if layoffs did come later on, then it would be a good time for us to step up and be there.
Yeah. It would seem like if they're going to do an open one, then you wouldn't want one right after that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how many open forums can you have? I don't know. I mean, I'll go to anything. I'm like a wet dish recipe. I've got a very good question. That's an excellent question. I don't know how many times you can get people to go to open meetings. We're having open meetings on the SRI, I think like every Friday.
Starting in March.
So,
starting this Friday.
Huh?
Starting this Friday.
Starting this Friday. They literally pushed me in front of them. That's exactly what it was. People are just now go, and then I think the president's seeing the faculty Monday.
Yeah.
I'd like to just make an announcement that I won't be there because I'll be in Florida with my children. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then I guess there's going to be another one sometime. And then, so maybe sometime in April.
And if it's needed, that we just...
Well, I mean, you can always have it. Yeah. A lot of people don't come, then you'll know that it wasn't all that needed. But
I think there'll be a lot of questions because the retirement program has just ended and people have been notified, and then people want to know, well, what's the next step?
Right. You'll want it a little bit after that, so we'll have some answers. Right, because you don't want to have an open forum where all I can say is that's a really good question and I don't have a clue. But it's, we'll want it probably like 3rd week or so in April.
Isn't that week that there's always the
Bring the Child to Work Day and Cook Awards and Office Professional Symposium. Isn't that the same week?
Uh-huh.
So what does that mean?
Anyway, that's a very good question.
Send us your walking calendar.
Maybe the fourth week. The other thing is that the hardship fund, I should probably just mention that, will be out and announced and probably like 2 weeks for solicitations and donations. Yeah, they're working. There's a team working on that, so we'll be getting that out soon. I have to get the creative senior staff for review, but we'll be, you know, getting a lot of people wanting to donate to it. So.
Well, that's good.
We had originally started it, you know, to help because we didn't have that SIT, but people want to help with layoffs too. So I don't. That's a little bit of a little fuzzy. So right now we're still pushing on the SIP side, but saying that people are layoff notice and applying. Because I don't know how much money we're really going to be able to have, and we're still doing it at least one time amount.
Thank you very much for coming, and thank you for meeting with us yesterday.
Okay.
Tomorrow, same time.
Push me in the right direction.
Mary, I noticed that when I'm leaving my office late at night, you're still in your office.
Yes. Somebody has to remind me to go home.
I'm not on the window.
Huh?
So you're going to turn your phone off and watch night?
I'm not sure, because as you know, that's a double-edged sword, and you come back to it mess, but I'm going with my kids, and so I have, but they're both at college, and so we're all going to Hollywood, Florida. Have you ever heard of Hollywood, Florida?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're all spending spring break together.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. How many 18 and 22-year-olds do you know who would be that magnanimous to take their old, tired mom on their spring break? I've got two fabulous children. They both gave up chances to be with their friends to take their mother on spring break because they're worried about me. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the beach. So I will see you all tanned and relaxed. Something more coherent than that.
Bring back the heat. Yeah.
I will. It's only 50 here. You guys won't. You'll be just like it'll be Florida here.
Thank you again. Thank you.
Yes, Mary.
Any comments on that? Or just move on? All right, let's move on.
That's all right. Back to Article 4.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What was 4.13? It's been chopped down to just say I believe it's the chair. He has a chair responsibility. He appoints chairs for each assembly committee. And I actually like that. It was very wordy, so I'm glad a lot of that was taken out. But it sounds like the way that reads now, I'm just trying to clarify it. The chair will appoint the chairs for assembly committees. Does that give the chair the authority to, I don't like the chair that's on that committee now, so I'm going to appoint one and that one's out? Because that just sounds like we're going a little overboard there, if that's the case. I don't know. I'm not sure if that was the intent at all, but that's one thing I'm thinking about is, you know.
I think,
you guys
are first. Just my process interpretation is, yes, that's what it means, but also that's what has been in place thus far.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it shouldn't change, but there was no provision the way it was written before, the Internal Operations Committee couldn't actually appoint anyone. They could just make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
By default, the Assembly itself can always appoint staff committees and chairs. But there was this clause that was here before that said to assure leadership and continuity and whatnot, the chair could appoint committee chairs. But in practice, what that meant was the chair appointed the committee chairs, because it's kind of an addition to have the whole Assembly voting on people's appointments.
Yes.
I'm not aware of any instance where somebody was removed from the committee by the chair, but that power was implicitly there.
But then if there's a committee already in place and the chair wants to step down, can the committee, based on, you know, their knowledge of their work together, they can't decide who the chair is?
Well, the chair just makes an official appointment based on their, what they said.
I would always, what I do, but it's not, this is just how I do it. You don't know who the next chair will be and how they would do it. If I see your concern, I can go around, kind of, you're drawn off that committee. You know, but then I think you turn it around and then there's a process of removing me. But I always make a call for nomination.
Oh, I know you do.
And then that's where that committee would be able to say, well, Brian, our committee strongly recommends that, you know, Alan Mittman move into the chair position of this committee.
Yeah.
I don't know how you word that in that, or do you just hope that they're in that chair who does go to the extreme?
And that's all I was bringing up. And I know you don't do it.
Right.
Some chair could say, hey, I want my buddy chairing that committee, so you're out, you're in, type thing. And it just leaves it kind of open.
So we need to look more at removal than appointment. Because appointment is, okay, the chair could appoint, okay, but removal could be where you don't want somebody just removing people.
Well, I think it's generally a position of any body. The chair is one of the duties of the chair of the body is to appoint the chair committees, and that's a power that you have to think of when you elect your chair to begin with. And if you really, your chair is going to be trying to think of the whole Assembly as a whole, and that, look, they shouldn't be, oh, you're my friend, I'm here kicking you in.
Yeah.
It's not like the Assembly is not going to notice that and could protest it or ask for a reconsideration or something at a meeting. Or
impeachment.
Here.
Okay, so I'm going to try. Okay, that's fine. Jason's going to say that's fine.
Some other thing, just to be aware of, other Assemblies have different approaches. The SA and the GPSA will elect their committee chairs in like an internal election by the same process that they elect officers. The UA doesn't really have a good process for it, so they're not a good
I brought up the issue. I'm okay with it at this point. The later process.
Isn't there a process in the Roberts rules? They always overturn chairs, whatever, via 2/3 vote?
Yes.
So, I mean, if we have a bad chair who makes a unilateral decision, we can both overturn that vote. So.
Yeah, but we threw out the Roberts rules. But the other one I would like to bring up, actually, it's funny you said that, because it was 4.5. I'm definitely not in favor of the Roberts rules. It's too strict, it's too confined to anything else, but I do want to mention that this is my personal feeling that in some of the meetings, things have then become very lax. People interrupting other people, people waiting to speak that aren't recognized, things of that nature. Now, what Jason did for this meeting, I really liked, which was, here's some basic rules we're going to follow. I don't know why we don't make sure those rules are followed in all of our Assembly meetings. That if somebody wants to speak, you know, you got to be noticed. I think it just seems like we've kind of gotten away from it. So I'm glad to take out the Roberts rules, but I would like to see some basic, and maybe whether it's in biology, I don't know how it is, but some basic rules to say.
The Roberts rules have not been taken out of here.
Okay.
It's been moved.
And
Roberts rule is a very stuffy book.
It is.
But in it, it says, you know, it is not designed to be, you shouldn't follow all of the rules for a small body like this.
Yeah.
If you are in a convention with hundreds of delegates, you have to maintain strict decorum and order. And for our thing, we basically
the Robert's Rules is a lot of times in a provision of a charter that if you get into a sticky situation that your charter doesn't address, you can go to this authority book and figure it out. Okay. So for the most part, yeah, I mean, the meetings should be, you know, one person speaking at a time in order. I mean, that's something we can work on better in our group, but it's just kind of a fallback set of rules in case you get into some really weird thing like, okay, the assembly body wants to overturn a decision of the chair, and we don't have that in here. Robert's Rules will state something like, well, that requires a one meeting notice in advance with a two-thirds vote of all membership, and it'll state the rules.
Okay. So, and when I heard that, the rules are still in there somewhere anyways.
Yeah, it's been
rules. That makes no point to me.
And there have been times in the EA system where we have tried to become more strict about the rules, and it's just never helped because it's people always prefer the kind of relaxed structure we have. So it's not the first time it's been suggested.
I'm not suggesting the Robert's Rules, though. Because again, I think they are too stuffy. And I just thought it was taken out altogether. It's not, so that's fine. I don't. But it's, even though they're in there, I'm in agreement. I don't want to follow those letters. But I do would like to.
The book actually says, for a small body like this, don't follow these rules to the complete. You can have a more casual conversation. You don't have to be like, have a motion on the table, and, you know, we don't do motions in our body like, you know, I move to end debate. You know, I'm basically saying, I'm done talking about this, and then you got to vote on that. I mean, there's a lot of things we don't do, so it's not like we're anywhere near strict compliance to it. And it says that if a small body was to do strict compliance, it would actually hinder your business.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't.
I guess I hear what you're saying about the Robert's Rules, Bill, and I think that courtesy should be utmost. And I agree with you. The interruptions that happen and people aren't allowed to finish a thought, but we also have some long talkers. And, you know, we have to be aware of that when we're in a meeting like this. So I agree with you. We don't necessarily want to be very strict with them, but I still think they're a useful tool to have when we need them.
Also, I think the parliamentarian can also keep us in order as well.
we can get them a
quorum. Yeah. The baseball bat.
Have a cap.
Yeah. Okay. Any other... I've got something here. In page 16, old section 4.3.4, it says the VP of IOC presides in the absence of the chair or executive vice chair. Shouldn't that or be and? Because the only time the VP of the IOC would preside is if the chair and vice chair were not present. I agree. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I disagree.
Okay.
Okay. And don't remember, just to get to that article, if you just mainly read those up. And then
okay.
The salary is 7 million. It's the U.S.
Okay. And so I'm hoping we really will get to stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you,
Bill.
Okay. Anybody have anything else?
I don't even think that's any time.
I have one other thing.
What about
page 15, 4.3.4, Vice Chair of Internal Operations, says one of the duties is monitors and supervises the operations of the assembly's committees. And I was wondering what that monitors and supervises really means, or if that's too vague, or what everybody thought.
I don't know anymore.
Where? Page 15, 4.3.4, bullet number 3.
Well, what is this?
What's the heading of it?
The Vice Chair for Internal Operations.
Oh.
Guess they have the version. We've got a new revision from the last meeting that had the changes
recommended at the last meeting, and it also pulled out the bylaws, which is why the patient.
You did?
I didn't get that.
I think it. Where was that?
Day. The 18th.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and so that was changed?
I didn't get
that. Or what? Well, the changes that were recommended in the first three articles, I don't remember what they were. Those were applied, and okay. The main recommendation was to pull all the bylaws out to a separate document.
Okay.
So we're operating off of a different looking draft.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
Amy, can you scroll down to 434? Or, yeah, the new 434.
Yeah, right there. Monitor and supervises. I can tell you what that is in other assemblies.
Okay.
In the student assembly and the graduate professional student assembly, the counterpart to IOC is on the listserv of each committee. So keeping track of what those committees are doing, maintaining contact with the committee chairs, lighting a fire under them on things that need to be done that have been passed out to them, and also proactively responding to them when they have vacancies on the committee.
And then, in my experience as IOC chair, I'm also kind of a springboard for advice on how to handle certain committee issues, questions, stuff, a lot of avenues in that regard.
Okay, I'm not happy with that. I just, in hearing that clarification is good. And like that, the details of that can sometimes be in like a standing rules or bylaws or stuff. You know, VP of IOC is on the other committee or whatever. So.
That would be my understanding as vice chair for IOC. What the duties are. I haven't seen it practiced much. They'll just be in short staff for so long.
Nothing about you people. It's just asking about what the. Okay, and I got.
That's a good question, I guess.
Question the old thing that it says about the vice chair in here. But really? I was supposed to do that?
I saw that. Cloud position too.
I personally don't have anything more on Article 4. Does anybody else have any other points on Article 4? Oh, Gary, just catch up to speed. We started with Article 4, so you haven't
okay.
any articles.
Thank you.
And this is one of the largest portions of it with 9 pages.
We're just about ready to move on from it.
And no one submitted anything to me with any. Anyway, Julie. Who were we missing today? Julie?
Alan.
Diesel.
And Bill left me something for when we get to Article 7. So, if we don't have any other things for Article 4, we can move on to Article 5, the new Article 5 procedures. I have a grammatical thing on citing something of how Robert's Rules of Order is supposed to be cited in your charter, but that I'll take offline with the committee. It's just a grammatical change.
Eliminating a person from the EA because of absences or consistent absences. I think, I don't know, the committee felt that it really, I don't know, we don't want to have a special policy to dismiss people. Our goal is to keep people here. And I think that we felt that we just wanted that right out. So I'm hoping that everybody agrees with that.
I disagree with that, but I think we've had this argument a lot.
Yes, we have.
So, I have the impression that maybe we're going to think that we discuss after we pass the first iteration, and it's going to require further vote from the body, the entire staff body, to pass it, so that we have more time to discuss that, because that's been kind of in contention for years now about that. piece of the charter. So maybe the committee can dedicate specifically that once this version of the charter is passed, we can deal with that section more thoroughly.
Or
does
this,
I'm
not
sure,
just agree, but only the only issue I've seen now so far that would be left for further discussion. So I say we try to get through this discussion because it's possible we can take this as is and go on. You know, but it's either this disagreement and there were three others before, we may have to hold off. But this is the first discussion that we might have that might be a little hot. And I said we talk about it. I mean, how are we on time? Because you got through four already.
Yeah, and six might be a little difficult to call committees, and seven is just two pages. So, well, it's 2 o'clock now, so we have 30 minutes. It could be pushing us to go into a detailed discussion about that. My concern is right now, it doesn't seem like we would ever use it now in an assembly where we have agencies already. But it could become a problem if we had a few people that didn't show up and we couldn't make quorum. We got pretty close to quorum issues once or twice.
Or if we got a lot, if we got the buttons, you know, people want to come. It's not pertinent now, but maybe become pertinent again.
The charter should be sustainable throughout the years, not just our current environment.
And we could leave it in there, and knowing that with the changes of the referendum that a future assembly could change it easier, then
can you read the wording of what you took out? Do you have it?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's
go ahead, Pat.
What it said before we changed it is any voting member who is absent for 3 consecutive or 6 cumulative unexcused or a total of 9 absences for any reason in 1 year from regularly scheduled meetings indicates, and that's the part that bothers me, either an unwillingness or inability to serve on the EA, and a resignation will be requested from the member by the chair. An excused absence can be granted by the chair or the administrative assistant in the Office of Assemblies for work-related parentheses, including vacation, reasons, or illness.
Can you take out the part where you started, the part you didn't like? If you took that out and kept reading on in the sentence and then say, could be, even if a could be asked,
so
still
well,
you know, I'm remembering the other thing that came up in this discussion is that this is the only policy about removing members. There's no impeachment general removal policy, and I'm wondering whether it might not make more sense to just come up with a general for activities or lack of attendance that is disruptive to the operation of the assembly. Any member may be removed by 2/3 or 3/4, whatever it is, a big, big majority vote.
I think I've got a lot of the general potentially means final life, Brian. I make a motion to kick Brian off the EA.
Well, but you're only going to do it if the person is doing something so disruptive that you need to remove them from the assembly.
And what Ari's talking about is what a large membership vote means 2/3 of the entire membership has to vote. Not 2/3 of the people at that meeting where someone brings the issue up. And sometimes rules like that sometimes require someone to have a prior meeting notice.
Well, the other thing is, for example, if I make a motion to kick someone off because of their attendance, then we're going to end up having that attendance argument every single time that kind of motion is made. People are going to start going back and forth about whether it's such a big deal. So invite that kind of discussion to happen every time we make that kind of motion, as opposed to once a year when we bring this up in the charter.
Well, how often do you think that somebody's going to be proposed to be removed for not attending meetings?
Well, it hasn't happened recently because of our lack of membership, but in my experience, we've had to kick off at least 2 people in my memory, and before that, it's been more than that. And as far as I saw, those were deserved to, those were necessary.
To me, it doesn't matter either way. I mean, I do have feelings about that as far as the EA moving forward. It doesn't matter either way, as long as it provides flexibility. And I'll tell you why. Either the charter says lack of attendance 3 times or 5 times, means, hey, those off, a lot of us here are off already if we follow the charter, which we, why work on it if we're not going to follow it? Flexibility with the words may at discretion of chair with a two-thirds vote. Those sort of words will give the flexibility to me as chair in this current EA to say, okay, I understand you're having some issues, we're not going to worry about the attendance problems. But when we have 13 people on the EA and 10 on my application, and one person is consistently missing, unexcused,
mm-hmm.
we should be able to remove that person. So it should provide flexibility. Somebody's discretion has to be there. It can't not be noted, and it can't be too hard where it has to be followed. That's how I view it.
Yeah. I agree, Pat. To me, I mean, can't the chairs or just all of us, I mean, there's common sense and practicality too. There's not enough members. We're always struggling to have people come on board. So why are you putting up more obstacles, you know?
Well, the current situation.
Hmm?
That's the current situation.
Currently, we're okay because we don't have enough people. So, no, I would never ask for someone's resignation.
Yeah, but that's today. What about tomorrow? I mean, to me, my preference is to see the whole thing just gone and just leave it up to common sense with the chair talking to a person and something is going on in his or her life. I don't know if it's illness or family problems or whatever, or work-related. It's common sense to me that the chair would talk to the person to find out and try to work something out like
which,
that.
Which I do, but the discretion still has to be there. And even if a talk isn't justified, oh, I just, you know, don't feel like coming.
Well,
they have to be in place to get that person off if it's necessary.
The existing says 3 consecutive or 6 cumulative unexcused. And an excused classification includes work-related, including vacation reasons or illness.
So your vacation, work-related, and illness are excused. So it wouldn't count towards the count. I mean, I missed a meeting because of a work emergency. That shouldn't count against me, and it doesn't according to our existing charter.
So how many times have you had to use this in the entire history of this?
Once tonight, I know we had one. I've been on this committee for almost 9 years now. I know of one, and the reason that individual was asked to be dismissed was not just because of absences, but because that person was disruptive
mm-hmm.
and non-cooperative. So that was a very, very convoluted reason.
Well, I mean, it still was in charge of giving us an ability.
Well, I agree.
If there's nothing in the charter about how to remove a person, and a person is asked to be removed, whether they're disruptive, they just haven't been to one meeting. Let's say the person last year who joined the EA and was never here again. That person can argue against that action of being removed, unless something is in there backing it.
Well, they can't even argue against the rules.
Well, of course they can, but then, you know, at least the rules do back, not just, hey, we decided we want to remove you. That's all. Like I said, either way, as long as there's a little flexibility in how it's handled and that it is noted.
So I'm hearing you want to have, I know it's a bad sounding word, but an impeachment process.
There has to be.
And you want the impeachment process to allow flexibility and also have some checks on it. And the checks I'm hearing are notice. The person has to have an opportunity to speak. So either they need to know that the motion is going to be brought at a meeting, or if it's brought at a meeting and they didn't get notice, they need an opportunity to be there before it's brought to a vote. And I...
Yeah, well, one thing I like about the charter that says they can request their resignation. There's nothing that says they have to kick them off due to attendance. Right? It says request the resignation in the charter.
That's what she read.
Yeah. It doesn't say that they're forced off or that they have to resign. It just says that the chair can request the resignation.
Well, what if
Brian asked me to resign, and I said, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not resigning.
So right. what difference does it make?
Exactly. That's
so what I'm saying, so why do we bother having all that?
Well, let's take your example. Let's say we use common sense, and Brian just talks to the person. Well, then they're going to be like, well, why are you talking to me? There's nothing to chart about kicking me off. Why are you singling me out? Why are you coming to me and talking to me about this? So if we don't have anything in charge that says that Brian should go talk to a person in that circumstance, it just creates a potential for a different kind of drama.
I know we're volunteers, but we are elected, and even a baseball team has rules governing the requirements to be on the team. You have to go to practices, you have to go to
sports.
You have to. It doesn't to me, and I'm only one voice.
Yeah.
I'm only one voice. I am not for a you miss three, you're gone. You miss five, you're gone. But I am for some kind of mechanism being in place that allows the EA the ability to remove someone.
I finally just actually read the policy, and you're right. It doesn't actually provide for the removal of the member. It's very wishy-washy.
Gary, give me a resignation.
So, how do you feel about if we brought back for further discussion at the next, because there's one more meeting before the field.
Yes, sir.
We could bring back a policy draft that provides for, I think, two-thirds is what most assemblies have for an impeachment.
Of the entire...
Two-thirds of the seated membership. So two-thirds of the absolute membership, not just a quorum.
Yeah.
Provides for notice so that the person has an opportunity to come to that meeting and present. And
I would say written notice.
Written
notice would be the agenda where it would be sent out. Okay, that is
called for you. Two thirds seated. And what Peter is saying about. Some loose guidelines saying that examples of disruptive behavior for which somebody can be removed are a pattern of unexcused or unexplained absences and behavior that disrupts the operation of the assembly.
That's as long as something.
Yeah, I'm okay with something like that.
I'm not. People miss for lots of reasons, and. People could always argue if they're here and they're not on vacation, and they're all excused.
It sounds like everybody has the same goal, different language, mm-hmm. and some different details. So
we'll
pull that together and not let it.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
You should have said that.
Polish it. Minutes.
But one other thing I think is important to recognize, Ari, we're being very specific about removing or impeaching a member of the EA. However, if you look at removal of officers, no conditions. The assembly may remove any officer by an affirmative vote of two-thirds of seated members. The assembly then immediately elects a new member. Doesn't say why.
Can we roll those in together in your draft? All right.
I agree.
Yeah, couldn't you just put that?
I mean, I just hate being that specific about why you would remove a member. I'm struggling with that.
I thought we were originally just talking about attendance.
We were, but now we've made it bigger.
Now we've made it bigger, but if we just talk about attendance, I think we are all in agreement on attendance.
I guess I personally feel like, even if you don't explicitly state the reasons, that officers, and to some extent members too, are political position. So there's going to be some political, if you have two-thirds of seated membership, there's a political consensus that there is something wrong with this person being in that position.
And I would be fine with just saying that for getting rid of an EA member, not an officer. I think the same removal clause for a member should apply that applies for an officer with no conditions. No conditions.
I agree.
And we can say whatever we want. If you've missed too many meetings or you're disruptive, we can use it. But I just don't want to qualify.
So then one scenario is I'm chair or a EA member, and I notice Leon leaves in early all the time. If I notice a pattern, what I consider a pattern, not showing up, I bring it up. And then that's when we is hashed out.
I mean, I think I'm visualizing that work that would probably work out pretty well in general, because the big check on that is nobody is going to raise a motion to remove somebody unless
there's a real net problem.
Everybody has been talking about for a long time.
Yes.
Hey, so I'd like to suggest that we move on.
Yep.
There's no objection, and this will go back to committee for further polishing.
That's good.
We have 15 minutes left.
But we're getting less people.
I know we are.
So it's good.
Yeah. I think we just lost Carl's food.
No,
we're not. No, we're good. No, we're not. We don't have 5 minutes. We can't vote anymore.
We're not voting.
I'm just saying. Just
we can get through it. Can adjourn.
Well, those who are not here had an opportunity on more than one occasion to vote.
Right.
So,
and then, I don't mean about the charter, just in general.
Oh, well. Yeah. We're not voting.
Right. We're just move forward.
Anything else on Article 5? So the 5-2, the regular meetings, is it too specific to include the exact dates and times of our meetings in our charter?
Yes.
We talked about that.
I mean, could it say twice a month? Or,
well, there's a sentence right after that that says the assembly may adopt different schedule regular meetings by majority vote. So.
Yeah, I mean, it gives us a clause in there. Just,
I think it's good to have a regular meeting schedule in the basic document, because that way that's set by default, so you don't have to adopt the schedule. It's just
but if it ever, well,
yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's never changed over the 10 million years of the year.
Yeah. But I do like the idea that we can adopt a different.
Except for those people that did the stupid hope thing on Wednesdays. But we attended to it.
There's always something somebody's got to do.
The only thing that doesn't apply for or adapt to, I guess, would be for holidays. If Christmas falls on the first Wednesday of the month, would you make a set schedule? Would you? Like, be the next day, would it be the following? I mean, I guess you
well, that's with the clause, just with the ability to
reschedule and stuff like that. So. Would
you want to put
or not have it?
Something in there?
I don't think it would be necessary to be that specific.
No, I don't think so. Not with the. May adopt a different schedule.
I don't mean a different schedule,
it's
just a
one. Yeah, it could be a footnote, maybe, but it shouldn't be in the charter.
The way that this would stand is if you wanted to cancel a meeting around a holiday or something like that, just it would have to be a vote.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm looking to cancel next meeting.
Yeah. But we sometimes make decisions to cancel a meeting or change a meeting in the executive committee, and that's not a majority vote.
Sure.
Well, maybe they'll keep it in mind. I don't. It's such a minor thing, so
yep.
Just food for thought. Either way works.
Anything else in 5?
I don't have anything
more. We can officially get through it all now.
Yeah.
We have only 8 pages of difficulty left, and 7 really is hopefully a no-brainer, but we'll see. Anything else in Article 5? If not, we'll move on to Article 6, committees.
There's one thing that, if I could, I'm sorry to go backwards, but Ari, we took out Vice Chair for Finance and Secretary. We took and Secretary out.
Yes.
And that is a major change, and I guess I just want to make sure everybody realizes that. That we are, it used to be Vice Chair for Finance and Secretary, and part of the responsibilities of the Secretary was to do minutes and that type of thing. So I just want to make sure everybody's aware of that.
The last 2 I've seen, they haven't done them.
They don't. It's always the Office of Assemblies that does the minutes, and that's why.
There's only one administrative duty I was looking at. I thought I needed someone to do, and that would be thank you letters.
Right.
Because we do have lots of guest speakers. I even think that Mary should get something for the department to have.
I agree.
I don't know who that can fall under, but it's it could be Gary or Carlos, right?
Thank you letters are not part of the charter as an official assembly responsibility. It can be,
but finance and secretary would mean the recording and, you know, the documentation, so that I would think that correspondence. But that,
I don't think there's a charter obligation for the secretary to do it. It might be a logical obligation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It wasn't originally there.
So nothing in this says that the assembly has to do them, and nothing says who has to do them, but that doesn't mean that you can't do them or that anyone.
Right. Sure.
All right, you need to go back. Just okay.
I have nothing on. Where are we on six? I have nothing on six. Oh, this is a big one, so.
No. People have had ample opportunity. I've read it.
We're still thinking
about that. Without putting it under a microscope,
yeah.
You know, and if I wasn't that familiar with the charter to begin with, why would I all of a sudden now put it under the microscope?
What I think is more likely to happen is these changes go back to committee, they get polished, and then it gets sent out again, and this is the final review that everyone will have to review before the next meeting. Well, the next meeting not necessarily means the next year. The next meeting where we talk about this may be the vote to say we approve of all these changes and it's going to go to referendum.
Right?
Does that sound right, Pat?
Yeah. And hopefully because of the process that you guys have chosen, that you have the backing of the majority of the voting members to pass this through, even if there are some minor things that people note out at the very end, there's the chance is there.
Yep.
And so if we're moving on to 7, Article 7 gives us all the power to change our charter in the future if we somehow miss something.
Right.
So I think that really is the biggest change in the whole charter that anybody of our employee constituents might care of or may not care of. But
as people are looking at this, Ari, if we send this out for a referendum, a vote at the campus, we don't get enough, as stated, the president can trump it.
That's my best interpretation of this, because the whole assembly was created under his authority. He can pull that back regardless of what amendment process he's laid out. We would have to double check that with the council's office, of course. I don't think we should set that as a goal unless, you know, we don't meet that. So, you know, hopefully with the electronic voting, we'll be able to get a 20% turnout. And
That was really the overall concern from the last election. Okay. People wrote on the envelope, they sent emails, they called us.
We need to get back to this.
We are,
Mr. Chairman.
You're out of order. You're out of the list.
We have this really neat software that we found that you could actually share the ballots in a digital file, all of the ballots, each ranked ballot, and anybody can tabulate it with this software. So,
is it from computer science?
Not our computer science.
Oh, okay. Right. Moving on, back to the actual charter. Anything on Article 6?
Okay.
We have minutes to go.
Article 7. I thought we finished.
Okay. Article 7 is only one and a half, no, half a page.
Half a page.
And let's see here. I don't want to look at this again because I think it's the biggest stuff change. Oh, and Bill had some things on here. Bill says Article 7, no Article 6. Was Article 7, no Article 6.
That's
bad. Backwards.
Yeah.
Actually, it looks like grammatical, so I'll mention it too. Or I'll just say it now to you guys. It says, first paragraph does not make sense /flow. So, let's make a note of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. What What old section was that?
Article 7.
What now Article 6. 7, now Article 6, first paragraph, does not make sense of law?
That's because it was supposed to be stricken, which it is now.
Right.
Cool.
Yes.
The second bunch of text there that's been strike through on my copy is probably not been strike through on yours, but there's like a brand.
Okay, great, great. Yeah, I see that, so I actually have that question too.
Okay.
So Bill has said here Article section 7.13. That must still be the old. I'm sorry, 6. More importantly, has now written, does it state that the IOC appoints the parliamentarian if Phil does contradict section 4.2 elections?
I thought we already addressed that at the last meeting. We did.
Okay.
I know we did. Ari, do you remember that?
I'm still trying to find the section.
Let me pass you this note from Bill. And then the last thing he says here, the Charter of University Benefits Committee does not seem to fit with the rest of the document. We know it's just an appendix. So take a look at it.
We did do that, Mary. We'll talk.
Yeah, that's another strike through there. That whole 7.1 strike through should have gone.
Okay, anything on Article 7?
Nope, perfect.
Going once. Going twice. No. For how much does our charter cost?
So there's one issue that could be reworked.
Yep.
And brought after.
And it's an impeachment process.
Yes.
And which is
to clarify this, and I got to get this updated document. Are you going to be working on a new updated document for today's proceeding?
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to get it done.
What is the bylaws that was decided, or I mean,
we pulled them out.
Informal was to pull them out?
Yes, I do remember that at the last.
And they'll be collated into a separate little document, which does not have the same scrutiny of revisions that actual charter.
That is correct. Right.
We can go back at a later date.
Bylaws
pick them apart.
Separate. Don't go under the same scrutiny as the
right. There's just a regular majority.
At a regular meeting with no advance notice required.
And we're trying to push the
although you're doing corn.
We're trying to push the charter changes out with the election material.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's we don't want to hold back to do
that. I have the bylaw changes drafted separately so you can as soon as the charter is approved.
So Ari, would you be able to get these all finished up with all of the current changes and then we can communicate about the impeachment thing? So
yes.
That we can have it ready.
So I can do another draft, send it to you, and you can review and send me back any more changes. And then once we got that worked out, we can send it to the whole list.
So I'd like to thank the committee again for awesome work and this body for getting through this at this special meeting, extended meeting, and we will not have to have another one. So I think any further additions or comments, I think we should be able to finish up an email and. Do you think we should put on the agenda for our next meeting the vote?
Yes.
What about with the new addition, though?
Well, that's what
I think we could work that out in email.
We'll do it by email.
We make sure everyone discusses it and it gets polished.
And gives me my suggestion is if you run the comments, because Peter brought it up, it was a hot debate just a couple of years ago, where it started before my time. Phone calls work too if you have some people that are tough to communicate this type of language and you know, just pick up the phone and see if we can work it out.
And the one last thing is I know that we had talked about the the makeup of the EA and we kind of put that on a back burner for right now and I'm hoping everybody's okay with that. But
we
still
informally we all
we
agree.
Still want to deal with
next
that.
Year.
Yep.
Next year.
Next
so,
turn.
And now we relinquish control back to Mr. Bryan.
Thank you. Great job, everybody. This time we're going
to
move ahead for a German of the meeting.
Motion to adjourn.
We're not open the forum. We got 4 minutes.
No.
Check.
No, don't turn me off.
So you need to know where it's
I'm not going to actually do that. Amy, I don't know how to turn it off.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.